As players brave the elements of Australia's oceans, the Fox Footy team is firing up this week's footy news agenda in the podcast bunker. This is the Monday Review.
It was the penultimate round of the AFL home and away season. 2017 is coming to a close, but we still have finals, and what a weekend of football it was. Plenty of good games, interesting results, and so much on the line heading into round 23. Hi everyone, my name's Tom Morris, and welcome to the round 22 Fox Footy Review podcast. I'm joined today by Riley Beveridge, who has purchased his house. He's got a couch, he's got a fridge, he's got a TV, he's got cutlery, and most important of all, he has got a footrest to lie his feet on. Hello, Riley. Welcome to the podcast.
G'day, Tommy. Thanks for having me, mate.
Round 22 was huge, wasn't it?
It was a big weekend, and I think we've got the finals picture looks a bit more clear now following some results. I think, well, barring some upsets next week, I think the top eight's pretty much settled. So looking forward to seeing if there are upsets, because as we've said numerous times throughout this season, you can't really predict what is going to happen. So we say barring some upsets, but upsets are likely.
Yeah, that is par for the course. And we've got a huge podcast coming up. So we've got Max Lawton, who's about to join us, talking about the run home. Then we've got Sarah Ollie, who is joining us with her Ballarat review. She was in Ballarat.
Queen of the rat,
as we like to call her. So she was in Ballarat. We'll talk to her about that Bulldogs versus Port Adelaide game and the whole vibe around the place, really. And then Julian De Stoop, Fox Sports News' very own chief football reporter with everything else. So we've got Adelaide, Sydney to discuss, Geelong, Collingwood, Josh Kelly, St Kilda, North Melbourne, Essendon, Gold Coast, the whole lot. So that will be Julian De Stoop. Then we'll have some Twitter questions from you guys. Fair or Fast, Australia's favourite segment, of course, and Jared Healy. So it's a jam-packed podcast. Stay with us. But first of all, it's time to introduce Max Lawton, who really is foxfooty.com.au's resident expert in terms of what's to come. Max, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Tom, and it's good to be not called a rat, as others say, so I really appreciate that.
Now, what's the best way to break this down? You are the run home expert. How do you want to start?
Well, I think we're probably better to start at the top, because it's reasonably simple up there. Adelaide should finish first, but there is every chance that they don't. So if they were to see GWS beat Geelong and then lose to West Coast, because they sort of have nothing to play for, it's mainly about the placements, they could still drop down to second. GWS Geelong, that's a huge game. That's basically to decide the top two.
Yes.
Winner there goes into second. There's every chance that Richmond could pass the loser now based on Richmond's enormous win over Fremantle. Their percentage is close enough that if they win by about 5 goals, they could still pass GWS and they would pass Geelong on premiership points thanks to Geelong's draw. So it's a close sort of situation. That will be the top four unless Richmond loses when we bring Port and Sydney into the conversation.
Given that, Maxie, is it pretty much, as if we do expect Richmond to beat St Kilda, is it pretty much GWS Geelong, winner finishes second, loser finishes fourth?
Essentially, yes. There's some room to move there with the Giants, but there's very much a possibility that Richmond will be moving up into third, which could get them to avoid Adelaide, which would be a very handy move indeed, given how Adelaide have looked at home, even though, of course, they did lose to Sydney in somewhat spurious circumstances on Friday night.
What about bottom of the eight, Maxie? I think that looks all but set now, given Melbourne and Essendon got the points on the weekend. Can you see a situation? I suppose Melbourne's the only real one at risk, because you'd think Essendon would win by triple figures on Sunday against Fremantle, given their recent history. So you'd think Melbourne playing Collingwood, sort of a danger game. Are they more at risk than Essendon, even though they are a game clear?
I could certainly understand that. Collingwood definitely more of a threat than Fremantle at this point of the year. Melbourne should play finals, definitely if they win, and even if they don't, they need West Coast not just to beat Adelaide, but win by 5 or 6 goals to pass them on percentage. So it will take a bit for the Ds to drop out, but it's a chance. And as you say, Essendon win, and they really should be in. The Dockers don't look like they're doing too much at the point of the season. It's more just seeing how Harley Bunnell can go and then celebrating your holidays, basically. West Coast really cheering for Fremantle, which will be interesting for Eagles fans to be cheering the rivals.
What about St Kilda and the Western Bulldogs? At the moment, they're well out of the eight, both on 44 points, but their percentage is poor. What do both of those teams need to do to somehow make a late run for it?
I mean, it's reasonably simple, particularly for the Dogs. They've got to win on Friday night and then hope for the best with the results. Yeah. Both teams need to win their game. St Kilda facing Richmond, the Bulldogs facing Hawthorn. And then Essendon and West Coast have to lose.
Yep.
And then there's a bit of percentage to deal with there. They're both very close. The Dogs could still pass St Kilda on percentage if they both win. But again, they're hoping for quite a bit, particularly involving Fremantle. Fremantle are really the key to all of this.
And Maxie, what about down the bottom of the ladder? We've got a situation where if Brisbane wins against North Melbourne, then North will obviously win the wooden spoon. But if North wins, they could even go as high as 15th, couldn't they?
Yes, they can. It's very close there. A lot of teams around for 5-6 win marks. It's the Rainer Cup, I believe Tom coined it last night on foxfootball.com.au. Very interesting scenes at the Gabba. And you know, the Lions have looked very good recently. They're every chance to avoid the wooden spoon.
It's a bit strange in the sense from the Kangaroos' perspective, though. I mean, if they win up there, then they probably get pick 4. If they lose, they get pick 1. So there's a big difference between that.
Well, it's that weird thing where footy has this whole thing around the T-word tanking. But, you know, realistically, as much as the draft doesn't have an enormous impact, certainly not as much as it does in the NBA and sports like that, you want pick 1 more than you want pick 4. That's just the sheer fact of it. It doesn't matter if they win that one extra game.
That is the reality. All right, so give us your predictions. What is finals going to look like in 2 weeks' time?
So I'm thinking that we see a first qualifying final with Adelaide hosting Geelong.
That would be a ripper, wouldn't it?
A rematch there. GWS Richmond in Sydney for the second qualifying final.
Yep.
And then for your elimination finals, we have Sydney v Essendon and Port Adelaide hosting Melbourne, which does give us 4 finals, none of them in Melbourne.
Mm.
2 in Adelaide, 2 in Sydney.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just before we let you go, Max, I'd like your tip for the... I'll ask Riley this as well. I'd like your tip for the grand finalists and the premiership, please.
Well, based on that, I'm trying to think of what's the actual structure of how that would go. I'm thinking an Adelaide-Sydney grand final.
Yep. And who wins that?
And potentially the Swans getting up in that one.
Yeah, that'd be amazing from Norton 6. Max, thanks very much for joining us. Your run home is terrific as always. Foxfooty.com.au, make sure you head there because Max Lawton's done a terrific job. And we'll speak to you soon.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you. And we've got Sarah Ollie coming up now. Riley, just
we've got a jam-packed episode.
We've got a jam-packed episode. That was terrific for Max Lawton. He is the doyen of the run home on foxfooty.com.au, isn't he?
Every Monday or Tuesday. Log back on.
Yeah, terrific.
It's a good read.
All right, Sarah Ollie, you were in Ballarat on the weekend. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
The rat, yes. No, it was a great day had by all. But yeah, nice to be joining you too.
Was it as picturesque and as quaint as it seemed on television?
I wouldn't say quaint, but it was quite beautiful, actually. I mean, there was so much standing room, and I love that. And you could see, you know, well, where I was sitting anyway, in the press box, you could see beyond the stadium and into the houses and netball courts behind. It had a great feel.
And didn't no snow?
No snow. It actually wasn't as cold as I thought it might be, but then again, I was sitting behind glass, so perhaps a bit colder in the outer.
You wrote a good column for foxfooty.com.au on Saturday afternoon about the Western Bulldogs truly becoming the team of Western Victoria. Can you see they've sort of made a commitment to Ballarat now, and it looks like they're going away from Cairns to focus on Ballarat. Can you see it becoming a long-term option for maybe not even just the Western Bulldogs, but clubs in general, given the infrastructure of the stadium and stuff like that?
Well, I got a bit pulverised by writing that, Riles. I think some Geelong fans were telling me that they're the team of the West, and I guess to an extent they always have been, but the Dogs are making a commitment by pushing out there, and it all started when they, you know, abandoned the name Footscray and they became the Western Bulldogs. They wanted to catch that catchment area and be the team of the West. And Peter Gordon, their president, was on the radio saying that, you know, that they've got lots of members now that have come from Ballarat, and they've even got businesses from Ballarat who are willing to sponsor them because of their association with the town. So I think it does have big impacts both on and off the field for the Dogs, and certainly if you can build a boutique stadium like that and, you know, commit to playing a few games there a year, the town's going to get behind them.
Talk to us about the game. Port Adelaide won it, and it makes it very difficult for the Bulldogs to play finals now.
Yeah, well, I think Luke Beveridge said it's in the lap of the gods, and it doesn't look like they're going to play. And look, it was a great game because there was a lot to play for on both sides. I mean, the Dogs were playing for their season, and I guess for their skipper in Bob Murphy, who announced his retirement. And Port Adelaide were playing not for their season, but kind of to prove a few people wrong. I mean, since the showdown, we've kind of all jumped off them. I mean, not everyone's always been on them, but since that emphatic loss, everyone's kind of thought, well, they're not really the real deal. But I think what we saw in the last 10 minutes of the game is that they've got some match winners who can really stand up. The likes of Paddy Ryder, Charlie Dixon, Chad Wingard, Robbie Gray, they're freak talents. So they're always going to trouble teams. And I think that they could be building towards something. So I'm not jumping off Port Adelaide yet.
Charlie Dixon's just about all Australian, isn't he? I mean, given his form, the way he's managed to impact games, particularly in the second half of the season, I mean, it was probably his best game for the year on Saturday afternoon, wasn't it, Sarah?
I thought so, although Ken Hinckley got asked that question in the press conference and he said, nope, Charlie's played well for us all year. I'm not going to say this is his best game. But I think what he does do is it's not just the impact on the scoreboard. He's very good at bringing other players into the game and making them hit the scoreboard. I think he's still one of the best contested marks in the game, and he's taken the most or second most for the season. So he's a massive talent. And when he gets his eye in, he's formidable. He's very hard to be beaten. And what we saw in that last quarter is that, you know, you do need those big marking targets because they can make the difference. And in the end, he was one of the difference makers.
Now, Jake Stringer hurt his hamstring. We know this, and that's a big blow for them. But what was the feeling like in the press box and around the ground when Bob Murphy went down?
Oh, well, firstly, we were like, who is that? And then it was like, oh, no, it's Bob. And I think some people thought he'd done his knee again because he was kind of...
Yes.
Slumped over, wasn't
almost,
he?
Yeah, he was rolling onto his knee, and we were thinking, oh, God, this is not the way it was supposed to end. But the biggest cheer of the match was reserved for when he came back on the ground. So I think that said a lot to the relief of everyone, and certainly to the relief of everyone in the press box, because they were thinking, oh, goodness, are we going to have to write that this is how Bob's career's ended? But he got back on the ground. But I have to say, I think when Robbie Gray kicked a goal to kind of put the game beyond doubt late in the match, I looked at Bob and he was standing just outside the 50-metre arc and he had his hands on his hips, his head looking down, and he kind of knew, well, that's it. The fairy tale ain't happening for me.
No, and it's very, very unlikely that it will happen this weekend as well, given where they are in the ladder and where the finals positions are at. Sarah, one last one. Big tick for Ballarat from you?
Massive tick. I'd love to go back. It had such a great vibe. Everyone was out. The weather gods were smiling. It was a fantastic day.
Good.
All for the rat.
All for the rat. Well, well done. Terrific articles as well on foxfooty.com.au. Enjoy the week and thanks for having a chat.
All right. See you, boys.
See you, Sarah. Well, from one guest to another, Sarah Ollie, thanks very much.
We're bringing him in today,
absolutely,
aren't we?
Terrific. And we've got another one. Our budget's just absolutely bounced here, Riley, because we've got Julian DeStoop on the line from Fox Sports News, doing a terrific job as always. Jules, thanks for having a chat.
Hello, boys. It's like AFL 360. You're just going from guest to guest to guest.
Oh, well, Rolls and I get a bit sick of each other. We need to bring in a third party. Three's not a crowd.
Fair enough, too. Fair enough.
No worries. All right, well, where do we want to start from the weekend? I'd first of all like to talk about Adelaide-Sydney at the top of the agenda, because that was Friday night's game, and it was an absolute ripping contest. Did you get the sense when you were watching this, Jules, that it was in many ways a potential grand final preview?
Yeah, I think so. Look, I think it's only... I only think three teams can win it, the other one being the Giants. Yeah, definitely it could be. And look, I think both teams walk away. They got plenty out of that game. I mean, Sydney won, which was very important to them in terms of being a chance to finish top four. And obviously, it's a great win when you beat the Crows over there. But I think the Crows showed they were jumped early, which is a worry because that's happened twice against Sydney in their last two meetings. But from there on, they really did dominate the game. Their midfield got back on top. And it was really only their poor set shot goal kicking that cost them the game. And look, they did experiment a bit. I'm sure if there's a final between these two teams in the next month, Daniel Tarley will be walking to Buddy Franklin at the first bounce. what happened on Friday.
Not Alex Keith.
There was a bit of the Alex Keith. And that's a bit of a free hit for the Crows because they're going to finish top two. So I think both teams walk away. And not only they lost much, even though the Swans ended up winning the game.
You said it was a free hit for the Crows. Do they now, because they've almost got top two certain, do you rest going to West Coast this weekend, or do you try and win and get the minor premiership and go all out?
No, I just don't think you rest anymore because of the week's break.
Yeah.
And we saw last year the teams that finished top four and won the first final had another week off, struggled in the prelim. So you certainly don't want to give your players any more time off. I mean, if Tarley is not quite right, obviously you don't take him to Perth. But apart from that, if they're fit and available, they'll play. And look, I don't think they'll want to go into the finals losing a couple on end. So I think Adelaide will go as hard as they would in any other game, and not so much because the minor premiership's that important. It's just the fact they want to go in with a win and go in playing some good footy, not on the back of two losses. But, you know, it won't be easy. The West Coast will be up. There's still a chance to make the final potentially by that stage, even though they'd have to win probably pretty big. But, yeah, I don't think the Crows will be holding anyone back.
Now, this game happened 3-4 days ago, and I am still speechless watching that Buddy Franklin goal. That was just remarkable. The fact that it was so similar to 2010 and the goal that he kicked against Essendon. I mean, we saw Cale Hooker tweet out something funny on Friday night that they might finally stop showing the replay of his chase. But that was remarkable, that goal, wasn't it, Jules?
He's still the most watchable player in the competition.
Yeah. Yeah.
What he's into, his 13th season, and he's still providing unbelievable moments. I mean, his third quarter was amazing. That goal, a beautiful little tap on that set up another goal, was just beautiful natural footy instinct. And he was in the best three players on the ground, even though at times Keith did well and Talia did well. he still has such a big influence on games. But yeah, I was there that night against Essendon live. That was the best goal I've ever seen. It was unbelievable. And the one the other night was probably not quite as good, but it wasn't far off it, even though a few people have been whinging that he ran too far and the umpire should have pinked him, which would have been very controversial. But yeah, for mine, if you can say you can go to the footy and watch one player at their best, Buddy Franklin by a mile would be the one I would choose.
And a quick shout-out to the bloke at the Union Club Hotel in Fitzroy where I was watching the game, who, as soon as he picked up the ball on the back flank, just said, oh, no, he's going to do it again, isn't he?
And he did. He actually, I'm sure that he'll actually remember that moment, Rolls, at the Union Club Hotel, knowing that premises. What I've got to say, though, he had the ball for 17 seconds, Buddy Franklin,
yeah,
while he was running. This wasn't a mark. He actually had the ball in his hand in free form for 17 seconds. I reckon most players would have the ball in their hands for maybe 10 seconds throughout the game, maximum. He's a phenomenal player. Do you think, it sounds ridiculous, do you think sometimes we forget how ridiculous he is, Jules?
No, I don't think so.
You think we all know?
Because he does these things semi-regularly.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
But do you think that's why we underappreciate him a bit? Because, I mean, he's nearly 200 centimetres and he's 110 kilos. Like, blokes that size shouldn't be able to do this.
No.
I think the one thing that gets underestimated when you look through sometimes the papers or the TVs after a game is games he doesn't get votes in. So I think sometimes he is ranked a little bit hard. There is games where he kicks three or four and he's probably the most influential player on the ground. But I guess like a lot of other forwards, unless you kick a big bag, you don't get the vote. Mm. There is times where he kicks three or four, probably over 20 possessions. He's a beautiful field kick, so he's probably set up a few other goals, and he should be the best player on the ground, but he doesn't get it. So that's probably the one area where sometimes I think he's a bit underestimated.
Well, from Friday night footy to Sunday evening footy, let's talk a little bit about Richmond versus Fremantle. Was this Richmond extra good or Fremantle extra bad for their second 104-point loss in a row?
A combination of both, but it was a good effort by Richmond, I think, because in the first quarter, Fremantle threw everything at Richmond, and maybe, you know, with the emotional lift they had of Bennell coming back and kicking a couple of goals, maybe the old Richmond might have just been a fair bit further down, maybe early in that second term than they were, and then once they got control of the game, they just put the foot down, and it's something Richmond haven't done is actually bury a team, really, all year. Most of their games have been close, whether they win or lose, so I think that was a good sign, but Fremantle, I mean, they have, what was that, 300 point beltings, one other by 89, and I think two others by around about 10 goals.
But so, the coach is safe. But the coach is safe.
Yeah, I don't know. If I was a Fremantle supporter, I wouldn't be overly excited about what's to come in the next couple of years. I don't see the kids coming through that are real, real quality, and they're just off their competitiveness, which is something that Ross Lyon teams have always been, and that's happened. Well, four times now they've been belted by over 80 points. So very, very disappointing. And the last 2 weeks have just been horrific for them.
Is it just the fact that they're a bit inexperienced? I mean, because like we saw them have this bounce back in about round six or seven this year where they started playing some good footy. They beat Richmond at the G. And I just can't see what's happened to them in the last sort of 10 to 12 weeks.
Yeah, you say inexperienced, which is true. But I look at this like starting midfield yesterday. It's Mundy, Fife and the Hill brothers. Like, yeah, it's not that inexperienced. I know that's only four players, but it's hard to believe a team with some of the quality that's in it can be just blown off the park like that in three quarters of footy. So that certainly comes down to a lack of competitiveness. I know they've got some players missing and there was a lot of kids in there, but I don't see a sudden spike in Fremantle next year. I haven't seen enough signs this year that that's going to happen. And as you say, the coach is under no external pressure at the moment because he's contracted for another 3 years.
Tommy, if I was to say to you last week that Jacob Townsend would kick six goals,
oh my god! Yeah, it's unbelievable because I thought Jacob Townsend. I obviously know Jacob Townsend, but if you walk past me in the street, I may not recognise him. You know, I may not. And I looked up his stats online. He hadn't kicked a goal since 2015. This was his first game for the season, and he's bagged six. He's slotted six. It's quite an. It's almost like a second debut. He's played 33 games now, and he never kicked more than a goal in a game.
Well, he's got to stay in now, doesn't he?
Well, the selection conundrum, it makes it very, very interesting now, especially because Josh Caddy was doing such a good job as that sort of midfield forward.
Yeah, well, if Caddy's, I don't know how long Caddy's going to be out for.
He won't be back this week.
Yeah, and the week off will probably help going into finals. So Jacob Townsend's got another week now to sort of secure his spot.
Riles, I want to ask you about Geelong versus Collingwood. Mm-hmm. This game, and you were in the office working on this game, it was an ugly contest, wasn't it? Collingwood, 6-1 in the first quarter and then 3 after that for the entire game.
Yeah, it wasn't a great look that they got. I mean, but they still kept it close. That's the thing. But I think Geelong really tightened up defensively, which is what they needed to do. They couldn't get into a shootout. I don't think they had the attacking weapons to do that. So, look, they tightened the screws defensively. As you said, they kept Collingwood to 3 in 3 quarters and they just got over the line. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't know, Geelong probably takes a lot out of it because they keep their top two hopes alive, but neither team was that convincing.
No. Do we worry about Geelong even though they are, what are they, third on the ladder, Jules?
Well, I don't think they can win it. Yeah, there's too many holes in that Geelong side. Let's be honest. If Dangerfield doesn't play the other day, they don't win. I mean, he was unbelievable in that game. And same old Collingwood, really. I thought Matthew Lloyd made some really good points over the weekend. If they've got the game on their own terms, they play well. As soon as the opposition slows them down, they don't have the confidence to pull the trigger because they don't have enough good kicks in their side to take the game on. So it just became boring on the weekend. They went backwards, they went sideways, and then late in that second turn, they turned over two horrific ones in the back half. Geelong kicked 2, and you know they got the game back in their control, which has been the story of their season. You know, close losses, but they just don't take the game on enough because they don't have enough good kicks in that side.
Yeah, but regardless of who your kicks are, it's bizarre the way they can play the way they did in the first quarter and then go into their shell once they get a lead.
But I think that's why they go into their shell.
Which is also bizarre because surely, given Nathan Buckley's experience as a player and a coach, surely he can direct his troops better than what he's doing at the moment. Matthew Lloyd's point about that he needs, if he stays on as coach, he needs more help from assistants to revamp the game style, a la Damien Hardwick bringing Carousella and Lepage and these guys, I think is absolutely spot on. You're right there, Jules, and Matthew Lloyd got it spot on yesterday. But the problem for Collingwood for me is these competitive losses are good for a low team, but they need to be aiming high. They need to win some of these games.
They had to make finals this year, I think, and Nathan Buckley put that on the agenda. It's been spoken about all year. It's a broken record. But at the end of the day, it's such a bitterly disappointing season the way it's panned out for them.
Yeah,
I
saw a bit of the Lee Matthews school where you judge your team more on the first half of the year.
Yeah.
Or probably the first 15 games in the last 6 or 7 when the season's really on.
And what were they? They were 5-10, weren't they?
Yeah. 5-10. And that's not good enough for a team that was aiming to play finals. And look, I think all this talk about Buckley is fine, but I think the biggest story is Collingwood's overrated their list. They have seriously overrated their list in the last 4 years. I mean, Gary Pert constantly said, we'll be back in the top four by 2017. But, you know, this is on the back of losing absolute gun players. You know, like, you watch Dane Beams play, you watch Heath Shaw play, and then obviously they lost some others through retirement.
Dane Swan.
You weren't going to turn around that overnight. So I think they've continually overrated their list, and now we've seen the last 2 seasons in particular that it's an average list.
This is the thing that I want to know from you, Jules, is given the way that Fremantle's performed and the way that Collingwood's performed, can you over a long period as well, it's not over just 12 months, can you genuinely make a case for them? Like, if you took away the names of who's coaching those teams in Ross Lyon and Nathan Buckley, can you genuinely make a case for them to coach on next year?
That's a good question in terms of Ross Lyon. I think because of Ross's record, he does deserve a little bit more time, but I don't really think he can make a case for Nathan, to be honest. I mean, it's been going backwards for 6 years, 4 years in a row without finals. Look, there has been contributing factors. He's rarely had his best team on the park, which has certainly hurt him, but I'm just not sure he's doing enough from the coach's box or the way he's getting his team to play is the right way. It just seems to change. It's not obvious how they're trying to play defensively, not on the weekend, but plenty of times they've been caught out. So, yeah, for mine, and I'm speaking to a lot of Collingwood supporters, I think most, as much as they love Nathan Buckley as a player and as a person, I think most of the real hardcore Collingwood fans think it is time for a change.
Yeah, and if not, then a massive revamp of the whole football department, just like Richmond. But I think I agree with you there. I think most Collingwood fans want Buckley to move on at the end of the year. And I think my gut feeling is he'll end up resigning. We've spoken about it at length this year anyway. But I think it's time to probably move on to talk about Giants and West Coast. Mm-hmm. And specifically, Jules, Josh Kelly. 43 disposals he had.
What a player.
Yeah, including one unbelievable act of courage. If anything, this bumped his price up even more, didn't it?
Give him 1.5.
He's a number. Yeah, if he signs for nine years, $9 million. That's unders. No doubt about that.
It's a bargain.
I think you'll learn though. I think the coaches will take him aside. That was silly what he did with Josh Kennedy. That was a complete lack of awareness of what was going on the football field. And in a way, he's very, very lucky he didn't get seriously injured after that. But what a player he is. To come back on, that right foot pass he did around his body that hit Shane Mumford on the chest was unbelievable skill. And he's just had it. He's got to be... He's a smoky for the Brownlow, isn't he, Josh Kelly?
Has to be. He's got to be.
Top three. Top three. He's got to be podium, yeah.
He's had some huge games. And it's funny. How many times has the opposition put a lot of work into Josh Kelly, though?
But would you? Is he a taggable player, given the way he can do it inside and out?
I think you've got to try it. Yeah. I agree. No, I know what you're saying. He can get it on the outside. He can go in. He can take a mark. He can go forward. Like, he's very difficult to stop. But I just haven't seen too many teams try it this year, which is surprising, given how big an influence. I guess the other problem is, if you do that, they've got so many others that will bob up. Yeah. But I think it'll be at least worth a try in a final, because you can't let him run around and do what he's done. The Essendon game, the game on the weekend, he's just done what he wanted to do, and there hasn't been much opposition at all.
Their depth through the midfield's crazy.
It's nuts.
Callan Ward and Dylan Scheel have been indifferent at times throughout the year, but their last 6 weeks have been out of this world, and then you add in Whitfield and Canelio and blokes like that, and Deledio coming in, and Kelly, as we've talked about, they're going to be a
Wilson off
prospect.
Halfback.
Yeah, they're going to be a really daunting prospect in the finals.
Go throw one up with the Giants.
Go on, Jules.
Is Devin Smith an overrated player?
Yeah, I was talking about this actually in the office with Kingy during the week. He's never kicked. He's only had 1 year, I think, where he's kicked more than 20 goals in a season. He's out of contract at the end of the year. He's going to get a lot of big money offers.
Goalless on the weekend, 13 touches.
He's never had a season, as I said. He's had one season where he's kicked more than 20 goals in a year. He's been a bit injury-plagued, but he's played more than 100 games now, and he's not a goal-a-game player. So I just wonder what type of player he actually is.
Yeah,
I know he's there for his pressure a bit, which is a good part of his game. He's not a good finisher. He misses a lot of goals. He's pretty selfish in front of goal, to be honest. He's got the blinkers on a lot. I'm not sure he's a massive loss. If he left at the end of the season, look, he would be a handy acquisition for another club, but I'm not sure I'd be giving away too much to get Devin Smith to your footy club.
Yeah, I think, what is he, 176 centimetres tall, 15 games, 15 goals this year.
Yeah.
Probably need a little bit more from a bloke that size, don't you?
And someone who's played more than 100 games.
Well, he's 108 games now in his career, so you expect a lot more. No, I completely agree. Quickly, Carlton versus the Hawks, Rolls. Sorry, Jules, we've got a Rolls here.
He's got to give him the moment in the sun.
This is his, and you know, Riley walked into the office this morning, chest out, head up, big sort of alpha male type operation coming right into Fox Footy, and he said, Charlie Kurnow will win the Rising Star. He is the best young player in the competition. Do you stand by that, Riley, on air?
I genuinely think you have to make a case for
him. Oh, he's backpedaled a little bit.
His last 8 to 10 weeks have been incredible.
I agree.
The fact he takes everything that's in the air, he gets 20 to 25 touches almost every week now. He chips in with a couple of goals. I mean, Ryan Burton, McGrath, Powell Pepper, they were all the rage first half of the year. But his second half of the year has, if you were judging it from round 10 onwards, it's Charlie Kurnow by a mile.
Yeah.
I think he's going to turn out. He won't win it, I don't think.
No, I don't think he will either.
If we look back in 10 years at the list of Rising Star nominees from this year, he's probably going to turn out to be the best footballer. I mean, as good as McGrath could be and a few of the others that you mentioned there, he is an amazing talent. So I think in 10 years' time, we'll look back and he will be the pick of the crop.
And this was an important win for Carlton as well, wasn't it, Riles?
Yeah. We've got a little group text with all of us at Fox Footy, and I sent a text on Saturday night saying that was reward for those who were there in that 148-point loss in 2015. So,
what's the name of that group text called, Riles?
I don't know at the moment.
It's just called Fox Footy Lads, I think. Yeah. No, I agree with that. You lost 8 in a row leading up to that this season.
And 14 in a row to West to Hawthorn as well. So it's been a long time coming.
We spoke about that. That was spoken about a lot on the weekend, and then the D's against the Lions got a real shock as well on Sunday, Jules. But Jesse Hogan, I reckon that was the best game of his career. 6 goals,
unbelievable, wasn't it? Yeah. Unbelievable. I actually thought in the last quarter I was being transported back to Essendon versus Brisbane. It was exactly the same.
Yeah.
Hogan got 5 goals up, and then just probably couple of dumb errors, trying to bite off too much with a couple of kicks, and they kicked 4 goals. I thought, they're going to stuff this up, Melbourne. But it was Pedersen and Hogan were fantastic again. But that unbelievable performance from Jesse Hogan. I mean, to come back, and he just marked everything. He looked confident. He didn't miss. It was an amazing performance. And Pedersen again. I was surprised in all the papers today he didn't get a vote. I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah,
he missed a couple of goals he should have kicked. But
he's had a really strong fortnight. He was good last week as well, Cam Pedersen. The thing,
what do they do with Jack Watts? I mean, he's not going to get suspended. That was a pretty soft incident in the VFL.
It's reported for charging.
Where's he at?
Well, I don't think there's room for him. I think you've got to keep him in the VFL this week, hope he plays well, and then bring him back in for the first final, if indeed he deserves a spot. But you just got to play your best team. And it's bizarre to say he may not be in the best. When we don't have Watts, it seems like there's far more variety in the forward line.
He's dropped a wee.
When Melbourne don't have Watts, I feel like there's far more variety in the forward line. That was just disregard that, Riles. Don't you agree, though, Jules? There's so many different goal kickers. Jake Melksham.
There's no way we would have said that 2 months ago.
No way.
Everyone was saying Jack's arrived. He's finally that consistent player. And ever since he's done that hamstring, he just hasn't come back with the same intensity and hasn't found the footy as much. So I agree. I wouldn't be bringing him back this week. The forward line, it's working well. As you say, they've got multiple options. And Pedersen and Hogan, well, they kicked 9 between them yesterday. Mm. So, at this stage, I don't think there is a spot for Jack Watts.
And what Watts offers is that link man higher up the field. But you've got Cam Pedersen, who's got such an excellent running ability. And I think that's the most underrated facet of Jesse Hogan's game as well. The fact that he's just about the fittest bloke at Melbourne and he runs all day. So when you've got Hogan and Pedersen that are these great athletes that can get up and down the ground, it almost alleviates, or it almost covers for what Watts does bring to the side.
Then you've got Hannon as that sort of third.
Yeah.
That sort of in-between size is doing a good job as well. So, yeah, I think Jack's in trouble in the very, very short term.
All right, Jules, you ready for fair or farce?
Always.
That's excellent. That's the answer we'd like to hear. So, the first one is to you, Jules.
Yes.
Fair or farce, Rod Butters cost St Kilda a flag?
That's a good question. Actually, I must say, I love Danny for all his whack.
Yeah.
I mean... Yeah, no, I agree with Nick Riewoldt and I agree with Danny Frawley. Well, they say the fish rots at the head and they were very close to 2 premierships, so I think that's fair.
Yeah, really. So, yeah, bottom line is you can't have a club president in that sort of off-field state while he's making key decisions about coaches like Grant Thomas, who got sacked in 2006. I think that's the most important thing. Riles, fair or farce?
Yep.
Jared McVeigh should retire as a one-club player at the end of the season.
No fuss. I think if he wants to go on, he's more than... I think he's earned the opportunity to go on. I think there'd be a lot of clubs, given the way he's returned from that injury halfway through the season. I think there's a lot of clubs that would take him as well, especially if he's got the view of becoming an assistant coach and he can do like what a Sam Mitchell's doing at West Coast. Mm.
And last one for you, Jules. Fair or farce, if Carlton knew about Chris Yaron's off-field problems, they should have let Richmond know. Fair or farce?
No farce. It's a competitive competition. You've got to do your due diligence. I know that's a very hard thing to discover. But no, I don't think I'd lay the blame at Carlton for that.
What are your thoughts on that, Riley?
Well, the timeline of when Chris Yaron began this stuff, as he really bravely put it in this video that surfaced last week, it's still unclear. So I don't know for a fact if Carlton actually knew.
If they knew.
If Richmond knew. I don't know when the timeline was. So it's too hard to say.
But it's a sad chain of events regardless, isn't it?
It is. And it's great that he's back on his feet and he's playing footy again in the reserves at waffle level. So, yeah, good on him.
Good on him. Jules, thank you very much for joining us on the Fox Footy podcast. You were terrific.
Before I go?
Yeah, go on.
Now, if Paddy Ryder and Max Gorn suddenly change the way they ruck,
well,
or suddenly they're
going to have to.
For free kicks that we haven't seen paid all year.
Yeah, it's the latter. So I spoke to someone who understands the ruck industry in AFL, to put it loosely, and this bloke told me that it was on those free kicks were paid in the last 2 weeks. They are correct. They were put on the DVD at the start of the season. The problem was that they weren't enforced in the first 20 weeks of the year, and now
Luke
they're enforced.
Luke Hodge mentioned that in the coverage yesterday on Channel 7.
You can't have a straight arm, but they didn't really enforce it until the Melbourne St Kilda game.
So you can go up with the ruck, say you're a right-handed ruck, but you can use your left arm. If it's slightly bent, it's okay, but if it's straight, it's a free kick.
Presumably, that's. I wonder how straight it needs to be. Does it need to be Murillithurin straight? Or anyway, we'll finish on that note. Thank you, Jules.
There's the cricket reference, Riley. We finally got one.
Thank you, Jules.
Thank you, boys.
Cheers.
Okay, now we're joined by Jared Healy, the host of Fox Footy's On The Couch on tonight, of course, at 8:30 p.m. A big episode coming up, as always. Jared, thanks for having a chat.
Good on you, Tom, and good to see you've finally lifted to get yourself back behind the wheel.
Well, it's great.
Very poor performance, Riley.
It was.
No,
really,
don't give me that.
Shame.
It's great to be back. When you're not fit, there's no point bringing the team down.
Had an infected toenail, he missed 2 weeks.
All right, that's enough about me, Jared. Let's talk about the weekend's footy. What was your overall take on on proceedings, especially the Melbourne-Brisbane game that you were at yesterday?
Well, my overall take on that is that we all know where Melbourne are at. They're on the way north. They're playing finals, and they could do some a lot of damage in the finals. I know David King thinks they can win the flag. They're one of three or four sides that can win the flag for mine. It's really exciting. But my overriding impression of that game was just how far and how quickly the Brisbane Lions have travelled in the last 6 to 10 weeks. They are a very exciting club. Lots of young talent. They're playing good footy, exciting footy to watch. And they're a club you'd want to be on over the next couple of years.
Another club you'd want to be on, Jared, is Adelaide, even though they didn't get the points on the weekend. They played Sydney on Friday night. And what was... Well, you wouldn't... If that was the grand final preview, you wouldn't mind seeing what the grand final has to offer, would you?
No, it's a really good game. They've got a fantastic forward line, Adelaide, but they were beaten. And if Buddy Franklin produces that same pressure that he produced in the last quarter, it's at a level I hadn't seen before from Buddy Franklin, just the chase and the tackle, the harassment. It was as if he said to himself, we are not going to lose this game and I am going to make sure we don't individually. And it was stuff with the ball and stuff without the ball. Fantastic stuff, but look, it augurs well for a great final champagne when you've got Sydney outside the top four and you've got Adelaide either first or second.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to September. One bloke who was pretty good on Friday night was Jared McVeigh. A few reports last night from Ralphie going around that he could leave the club at the end of the season. If you're a team in Victoria and you've got McVeigh wanting to play for 1 year and then going into an assistant coach, would you give him another crack?
I would. I'd be disappointed if the Swans let him go. I think there's got to be a way that you can keep that sort of talent in Sydney. He was done for place in the back line on the weekend. They moved him forward. So he's at the end. We all know he's at the end. But he's such a brilliant user of the football and a fantastic player. I'd, from an ex-Swans perspective, like to see him finish at the club in his playing days. Obviously, everything's a commercial decision now. He's got great talent. He's going to be a terrific coach as well. But I would hope that they'd be able to keep that in-house in Sydney.
What do you think the rationale is then for moving him on?
I don't know that, to be honest. Yeah. I suspect it's list management, it's contracts, it's all sorts of things. But I would hope that they can get creative and, like a few other clubs, utilise the capacity to pay a player on the field and play a coach off the field and get a marriage of the two payments, so everybody's happy.
So if you put your list management hat on then, Jared, what clubs do you reckon potentially could use a player like Jared McVeigh if indeed he does have to move on from Sydney and he wants to play on?
Well, he suits obviously every club at the bottom in the bottom because he's a great leader. So you can tick off the likes of Brisbane and North Melbourne and Carlton. Terrific for those people. But he is a player that is at the end and the end can come quickly. So you've got to be very careful, I guess, just how much faith you put in him playing 20-odd games. And to me, that's why he's best utilised in Sydney. He can gradually go out, they can manage his exit, and he can also be of so much help off the field because he is going to be a terrific coach.
Jared, we spoke about this on the show earlier, but from your perspective, Fremantle's drop-off in the last sort of 4 or 6 weeks, would you be worried about that, or are you more taking a long-term view of Fremantle, given they're trying to bring through some younger players?
You can only take the long-term view. Yeah. I mean, 100-point losses aren't healthy, but it's in the perspective of a coach who's having a look at his list, having a look at some young players. And when you get to that tipping point that Carlton got to earlier in the season, had too many young kids in, then you can get smashed by a side who was coming off the back of a loss, who's trying to get ready for finals campaign. And the other one was against the Sydney Swans, who were just much harder and more senior in body shape and experience than Fremantle. So I've got no concerns about Fremantle. I think they're actually getting together a pretty good list of players, or an exciting list. And when they're all up and about, I've seen them in the first half do some damage. If they can recruit well, then they will once again return to being very competitive.
Now I'm sitting at home tonight, Jared, at 8:28, and I'm ready to watch on the couch. Yeah. Tell me why I should watch the episode. What have you got in store for tonight?
Well, I'll just say one name, Nick Riewoldt. It's his last game coming up. He's going to give us some insight that he's never, ever shared before with anybody, and David King's got half a dozen questions for him, including the time that Rod Butters was at the club, that will explore, perhaps on a deeper level, what he actually felt.
Terrific. Can't wait for that. 8:30 p.m. Jared Brownie, Mick Warner, Nick Riewoldt, Jonathan, it's an all-star, Jason Dunstall, all-star show. Riley.
It's a great show. My favourite time of the week, 8:30 Mondays.
Terrific. Oh, good stuff.
Fantastic, boys. It's just great to see you back from the injury list.
No, thanks for having you.
There's a few cardiac questions being asked.
Nah, that'll do. Thanks, Jared. We'll wrap it up there. Enjoy
Cheers,
tonight.
Jared.
Thanks, Jared. Oh, he's full of gags today, isn't he, Jared? Terrific work. Well, Riles, thanks for being part of the podcast. It's been good.
It's been good. It's like
lots of guests.
Yeah, I know. It's almost like we're Mike and Mike in here, aren't we? I mean, just the two of us. Who would you be? Would you be Mike or Mike?
I'd be Mike. On that note, thanks for joining us to all the people listening. Hopefully you've got this far. And we'll see you later on the week. Ben Waterworth is back for his Thursday match committee podcast ahead of a huge round 23. And then we'll be back ahead of next Monday looking into finals, all things footy. This is foxfooty.com.au. Have a great week.